Alan Nern. Nous connaissons qui est Alan Nern. Alan Nern, c'est un journaliste américain qui travaille pour The Nation. Et souvent, on a parlé de lui à Radio Haïti à cause des enquêtes réalisées en Haïti sur des sujets très sensibles. Hi, Alan.
Hi.
Welcome to Radio Haiti.
Thanks.
At last, I see you face to face.
Yes, it's an honor to be here. Thank you.
Alan, you are working on a story, two stories, three stories. How many stories are you working on in Haiti for your last trip?
Well, several different stories, looking at the World Bank, IMF structural adjustment and the demands they're making on Haiti and the impact that will have, and also continuing to look at the secret U.S. operations in Haiti that in the recent period have included the sponsorship of FRAP and people like Francois and Cedrus being on the payroll of the CIA. So I'm looking into that whole group of issues.
Actually, we are in the process of, quote-unquote, receiving the documents the U.S. Army took 2 years ago. And in this process, what can you tell me? Because you work hard on this story, and I would like to know what is your point of view about the restitution of part of the documents and the keeping of another part. Why and how can we recuperate the whole bunch of papers and cassette, etc.?
excuse me. The U.S. is trying to cover its tracks. They're trying to conceal information about U.S. collaboration with the Haitian coup regime and with FRAP, and that takes several forms. In the latest article I did, which is just released, I quote a document written in Washington, known as the Memorandum of Understanding, which seeks to put conditions on Haiti's use of the documents, of the FRAP and FOD documents. It essentially demands that Haiti surrender its sovereignty over these documents. The first point is that legally, these documents belong to the government of Haiti. Even the United States Congressional Research Service reached that conclusion. There is no doubt about it. But
you mean that the United States Congressional Research conclude that the documents belong to the government of Haiti?
Yes, correct. So that means that legally, in essence, the United States stole these documents. They are not the property of the United States. They're the property of Haiti. And now, after having stolen them, the United States is saying, we won't give them back to you unless you agree to certain conditions. And this memorandum of understanding, which they are pressing Haiti to sign, would say, first, that the United States has the right to edit the documents in any way they want. They can take out names. They can take out portions of the documents. Secondly, it gives no guarantee that the United States will return all the papers to Haiti. So they could simply keep some of them, and Haiti would never know that they have been kept by Washington. Then it says it sets conditions which would mean that many of the documents could never be seen by the Haitian people.
Meaning that the Haitian government signing this document should commit itself not to give any publicity to those documents.
Well, the Haitian government has not signed this agreement yet. This is what the U.S. is demanding. And Haiti, so far, the Haitian government position has been to say, no, we will not agree to these conditions. But this is what the U.S. is demanding, and yes, the U.S. is demanding that the information in these documents not be publicized in the FRAP and FOD materials. The way they put it in this memorandum of understanding is they say if the release of any information might be reasonably thought to have the risk of causing any kind of illegal reaction, then that information cannot be released. So that means, for example, that if one could reasonably think that there might be the risk that the release of documents talking about how the CIA was paying FRAP murderers to murder Haitians, if that information might inspire Haitians to do demonstrations, say, in front of the U.S. Embassy, or sit-ins in front of the U.S. Embassy that would technically be illegal, then you couldn't release that information. Mm. That would be a violation of the terms that the United States is demanding. Mm. But it goes even further than that. In this memorandum of understanding, the United States is also demanding that the Haitian government itself be restricted in how it can use the FRAP and FOD materials. It says that these materials can only be used by the Haitian government for law enforcement, for legal actions, or for human rights investigations relating to the coup regime period. But if, for example, the Haitian government decided that they wanted to do a political, a policy investigation of a matter such as, say, U.S. support for the FRAP, or U.S. support for the coup regime, or if the Haitian government wanted to do an inquiry into the coup against Aristide and a possible U.S. role in that, that would be prohibited because it's not law enforcement, it's not a human rights investigation. So therefore, the Haitian government itself wouldn't be allowed to use the documents for that purpose. And then finally, the U.S. is demanding in this memorandum of understanding that the Haitian government keep detailed records on every single person who is allowed to look at the FRAP and FOD documents. They have to record how long the person was in the room reading the documents, what time they entered the room, what time they left the room, get the name and all the particulars on that person, and then the Haitian government has to be willing to share this information. Obviously, the United States wants to make sure that no leaks occur. So if a particular piece of information leaks out to the public, the U.S. can then track down who was the person that read the document that had that information. I mean, these are really outrageous conditions, but that's what the U.S. is demanding regarding the documents in its memorandum of understanding.
First, that means that the U.S. government, all the structures of the U.S. government have the same position.
Yes.
Without any discrepancies.
Yes.
Between agencies or part of the U.S. government. The U.S. government is adopting the same attitude towards those documents for their release.
Correct. Mm-hmm. That's right. In fact, in this case, the memorandum of understanding I was just mentioning, it was drafted in Washington with consultation by all the different U.S. agencies. And then the U.S. and at the bottom, there's a space for the signature of Ambassador Swing and the signature of the Haitian Justice Minister. So it was drafted by the different U.S. agencies, then presented via the U.S. Embassy and Ambassador Swing to the Haitian government. So what you have is the U.S. State Department and Ambassador Swing and the White House covering up what the U.S. has been doing in Haiti. And they're covering up for the CIA, for the Pentagon, but also for themselves. Because one thing that's very important to understand in terms of the way American government works, the CIA and the Pentagon are not independent agencies. They report to the National Security Council at the White House. So they report all their information and policy
and
questions
actions.
And actions. They go through Anthony Lake, who is the National Security Advisor for the President. And they have to be approved by Lake, and they have to be approved by President Clinton. And likewise, the Secretary of State, Warren Christopher, is consulted on these matters. In terms of Haiti, Christopher himself does not get that involved, but the number two man in the State Department, Strobe Talbot, gets very personally involved. And so he is consulted on all these decisions. So when you have the CIA or the Pentagon taking an action in Haiti, they're not just acting for themselves, they're also acting for the State Department via Strobe Talbot, for Anthony Lake, the National Security Advisor, and for President Clinton
himself.
That is,
for the presidency.
Yes, that's right. Mm. And the actions in this case of the documents are just another illustration of that.
Your point, if I understand, is that the actual U.S. administration is not trying to cover the tracks of agencies like CIA, like the Pentagon, or the previous administration they are trying to cover their own tracks in their involvement in the Haitian policy.
That's right. Mm. For example, the U.S. support for Constant and Frappe, that began when Bush was president, and it involved two agencies. The Defense Intelligence Agency, through Colonel Patrick Collins, who was the Defense Intelligence Attaché here, and the CIA, through first Don Terry, who was the CIA station chief, and the man who followed him, John Camborian, who was the CIA station chief. These were the men who worked with Constant. Collins urged Constant to form an organization to counter the popular movement, and that later became the Frappe. And then Terry and Camborian paid Constant. Now, although this began under the Bush administration, it continued under the Clinton administration. In fact, Frappe emerged publicly in 1993 while Clinton was president, and while some of the worst acts of Frappe terrorism were being perpetrated, the burning of Cité Soleil, Frappe people participating in the assassination of Ismarie, on and on, a long list of atrocities, Constant was being paid by the Clinton administration through the CIA, through John Camborian, the station chief. So he was an employee of the Clinton administration, just that he is as he has previously been an employee of the Bush administration. And then, during the same period, starting around June or July of 1993, U.S. arms started coming in for the Frappe, coming in from Miami. According to a Haitian officer who participated in these deals, between 5 and 10,000 individual weapons were shipped in from Miami for the Frappe. They went via Michel Francois. They would come in cartons that were marked police material, do not open. These cartons would then be brought to anti-gang, put in storage containers, stored at the airport, and then Francois, working through Constant and others, would oversee the distribution of these weapons to Frappe. And these weapons included pistols, submachine guns, fragmentation grenades, gas grenades, etc. And they were coming in from the United States and were being handled
yes.
by Constant on the CIA payroll and Francois, who, according to NBC News, was also
on the CIA,
paid by the CIA payroll.
The same way that Cedras and Biambi were on the CIA payroll during all those years. But tell me, those expedition of weapons from Miami were made by whom? By what organization or what private companies or what?
All the facts are still not out on that. I'm still investigating that, and I believe that eventually people in the U.S. Congress in Washington will start to investigate this as well. So we don't yet know the full story of exactly how the shipments were handled. But what is known at this point is first that the weapons came in from Miami, that this was during the arms embargo against Haiti, that during much of that period, especially starting in late 1993, there was a U.S. naval blockade of such shipments into Haiti, yet these weapons were not intercepted by that blockade.
And they went through anyway.
Yes, mm-hmm. That those receiving the weapon shipments, the two of the key individuals receiving the weapon shipments, notably Constant and Francois, were both on the CIA payroll. Also, that many of the weapons came via Santo Domingo, and in Santo Domingo was Evans Francois.
The brother of Michel Francois.
Right, the brother of Michel, and Evans Francois was also on the CIA payroll, this according to Lawrence Pezzullo, the former special envoy for Haiti for both Bush and Clinton. Pezzullo told me that Evans was also on the CIA payroll. And Evans, out of Santo Domingo, handled smuggling operations for and financing for his brother Michel. So you have many of the key players in this working for the CIA. Now there are many further details that are still to be unearthed, but that's what we know so far, and it fits in very consistently with the fact that the U.S. was paying Constant during that period. And I think they were using the Frappe as a means of putting pressure on the exiled Aristide government, pressure through repression of the popular movement. Constant told me that the U.S. said to Aristide, Look, Aristide, the frappe is now rising in Haiti. Toto Constant is a rising force in Haiti. You are going to be left behind. Therefore, you better make a deal with us. You better agree to our demands, otherwise the frappe is going to take over. That's what Constant said.
What were the demands of the U.S. then?
The essential demands. There were many, many demands, but I just think the core demands were, first, agreeing to a U.S. military occupation of Haiti, something that Aristide had long opposed. Second, agreeing to the World Bank IMF structural readjustment plan for Haiti, which was really a reversal of the old Aristide popular movement platform of what he called overturning the table of exploitation. The IMF World Bank program moves in the other direction by benefiting the business class at the expense of the poor. That's by the admission of, for example, Axel Peuker, who was one of the World Bank economists who helped draft this plan. So the U.S. wanted Aristide to agree to this plan, and he did in August of 94, because he saw on the ground that his people were being slaughtered by the frappe, and he, I apparently felt, that the only way to stop the bloodshed was to agree to these U.S. Demands and have them bring him back. And I should add, by the way, that Constant's version of what the U.S. said to Aristide was confirmed to me by Lawrence Pezzullo. So I think there's no question that, it's accurate. Pezzullo said, yes, we did use the frappe in terms of our negotiations with Aristide. We told him, frappe is a rising force, you'd better move in our direction, in the direction of the Haitian business community, if you want us to bring you back. Pezzullo, by the way, denies that he knew about the secret U.S. support for frappe, but he admits that the U.S. used frappe to pressure Aristide in the negotiations.
And he admits that François was on the CIA bureau
Evans
then.
Evans François
was the CIA bureau then.
He claims Michel was not, but he said Evans was. But NBC News reported that Michel was also.
So what you are actually saying is that when Aristide agreed on the U.S. Invasion, agreed on the World Bank and IMF economic programs, saying for the U.S. invasion, okay, my house is on fire. Whoever helped me fight the fire will be welcome. Justifying by this subtlety the U.S. military intervention. Do you explain that? Do you imply that the firefighters were the arsonists?
Yes, absolutely. That is clearly what the facts show in this case, that the U.S. set the fire by launching the frappe and also by secretly supporting Cedras and François. As they had the head of frappe on the payroll, arms came in from the United States. These arms were being used to murder people, to murder popular movement activists, peasant leaders, labor leaders, student leaders in Cité Soleil, in the Central Plateau, everywhere. Aristide saw that his people were being killed by the frappe, and the U.S. then, with the height of cynicism, turned to Aristide in Washington and said, oh, look at what's happening. All your people are being killed. The frappe is rising to power in Haiti. You'd better give us what we want so we can put a stop to this. So they set the fire, then they ask for credit when they finally agree to put it out. It's somewhat like a kidnapper who steals a child from the family and then contacts the mother and says, we have your child. If you want her back, give us this many dollars. Give us your house. Give us your belongings, and then we'll give you the child back.
But I have a problem. The Harlan County affair. Clinton sent the boat just to implement the Governor's Island Agreement. Then Toto Constant and Frappe made this show, and Clinton turned back the boat. I don't understand. Was it a whole show in Port-au-Prince and in Washington, or was it really a try by Clinton to intervene through Harlan County, then being blocked by other U.S. agencies. I don't see that.
Yeah, the Harlan County was an unusual case because when it came to the fundamental matters like support for the FRAP, the U.S. government was unified, and they carried that through as a coherent policy. When it came to putting pressure on Aristide to abandon his popular movement positions and embrace a World Bank policy that favored the rich, they were unified on that. But when it came to sending back the Harlan County, the U.S. government couldn't make up its mind. There was a lot of debate, a lot of discussion, and they just couldn't decide. In fact, as the Harlan County was sitting offshore, as the boat was actually there outside the harbor, they were still debating it in the White House. They were still debating it in the State Department and the Pentagon and the CIA. They just couldn't decide. There was much differing opinion within the U.S. administration. So because they couldn't make up their mind about whether the Harlan County should dock, Constant got no instruction from Washington. Constant told me that the U.S. Embassy knew that he was going to do his demonstration on the dock. In fact, he had even announced it on the radio the day before, and he didn't hear back from them. He didn't get any word from the embassy saying, don't do it. If he had, he would have called it off. But he heard nothing back, so he assumed, okay, it's all right to go ahead. And I think the reason he was not told to stop was that the U.S. didn't know what it wanted to do. They couldn't make up their mind, and so the Harlan County remained offshore and eventually went away. Now, that was kind of an unusual incident, because in most cases, when it comes to the core issues, like creation and backing of the FRAP, secret support for people like Francois and Cedrus, secret violations of the embargo, as when the U.S. Secretly authorized Texaco, the U.S. Department of Treasury authorized Texaco to make major oil shipments into Haiti. Those were unified policies. But in the case of Harlan County, Washington just couldn't make up its mind.
Hmm. So everyone, it was an open field. Or
yes, exactly.
Where everyone could do whatever he wishes.
And Constant went ahead because nobody told him to stop.
I see. But Constant told afterwards that he told the U.S. Authorities here that he was just making a show, that he did not want to harm any U.S. lives. He told that.
Right.
So they knew that
right.
It was just a show.
Right. Oh, the excuse they gave or the reason they gave that, well, we didn't want to dock because that would have endangered our personnel, that wasn't a real...
That wasn't
the real reason, yeah. I mean, I think the real reason was the U.S. just couldn't make up its mind. They couldn't make up its mind as to whether politically it would be a good idea to send in the Harlan County or not.
But what you just told us about these documents and the constant problem, you have already written about it. What is new now, Alan Nern, about what you are investigating?
Well, there are 3 points. One is this memorandum of understanding, which I mentioned.
Which is new,
right,
yes.
Which details...
You are going to...
Very harsh conditions that the U.S.
This memorandum is going to be published in The Nation.
Yes, excerpts from it, the key points.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly...
And you have this document.
Yes.
You have seen this document,
yes.
And you have a copy of it.
Correct.
Good.
And then secondly... there's information about the deportation of Constant.
Mm-hmm.
A U.S. immigration judge has ordered that Constant be sent back to Haiti, and it's not clear yet whether he's going to appeal to try to stay in the U.S. But in the
he said he should not.
Well, first he said contradictory things. Uh-huh. First he said he wouldn't, then he implied he would. That's not clear.
Mm-hmm.
But privately, the U.S. has been in touch with Constant while he's been in prison. And they've worked out this extraordinary deal with him, under which, if he does come back to Haiti, he will come back with VIP handling.
Treatment.
Yes. He will be brought back, and this is according to another internal memo I have, he will be brought back, flown back in a special U.S. government plane. He won't be put on an American Airlines flight like most people who are sent back are. He will have his own special U.S. government plane that they'll fly him in on. When the plane lands at the airport, the regular Haitian ground personnel at the airport will not be allowed to handle the plane. Instead, Pentagon contractors from Brown & Root will handle the plane. Constant will not go through the regular customs and immigration. Instead, he'll go through a special customs and immigration set up at what they call an isolated location. He is to receive special security arrangements. And there is also to be what the memo describes as a crowd control effort to keep crowds away from Constant. And there will finally be what the memo calls a public affairs strategy. It says because Frappe and Constant are so unpopular with the Haitian people, there will be a public affairs strategy to urge the Haitian people to remain calm, as they put it. And these are unprecedented arrangements for deporting someone back to a foreign country. Then another point, and this is worth mentioning, this memorandum, which lays out these special arrangements for Toto Constant, was written on December 11th of last year. That was 4 days after Constant called me from his prison cell in Maryland. And when he called me, he told me that he wanted me to come down and meet him in person at the jail, and that he would then reveal everything about his work, his secret work, with the CIA and American intelligence. Up to now, he has not revealed everything. He's revealed bits and pieces, parts. But he told me he wanted to tell all. And I said, well, of course, I would like to hear the story, so I'll come down and try to meet you. When I then tried to make arrangements to see Constant, when I contacted the jail and contacted the immigration service to be allowed to see him, they wouldn't let me see him. They told me, oh, Constant has changed his mind. He no longer wants to talk to you. So Constant was threatening to tell all he knows, and then shortly after that, these special arrangements were made for him. I believe that he was using this threat, the offer he made to me on the phone, as a bargaining chip in his dealings with the U.S., and that he got something out of that. He got these special arrangements. Yes, this very special treatment that would not be accorded to an ordinary citizen, or certainly not an ordinary citizen who is wanted on 9 counts of murder, attempted murder, and torture, as Constant is.
You think that the Haitian government is going to agree on this special treatment arrangement between Toto Constant and the U.S. government?
Well, I don't know.
Is this a matter of discussion between U.S. authorities and Haitian authorities?
At this moment, I don't think so. Because what the U.S. authorities have said is that we handle this deportation, we will do it our way. And for example, providing the special plane, you know, that plane comes from the U.S., they decide that. As to the arrangements on the ground and the security and the public affairs strategy, I think that's still to be worked out. I don't know what the Haitian government's stance on that is. Actually, there's one other important point on Constant that I forgot to mention. The memorandum also says that the Haitian government will receive no advance notice on Constant's return. So that means that it will be a surprise to the Haitian government and the Haitian people. One day, just out of the blue, the U.S. will decide, okay, we're sending Constant back today. And as I understand it, the Haitian government will only be informed when the flight plan is filed for Constant's plane, mainly before the plane takes off from the U.S. According to aviation regulations, you have to file a flight plan, and you have to inform Port-au-Prince that the airport we're going to be flying into your airspace. That's when the Haitian government will know at the last minute. And of course, one of the ideas behind this is to try to keep the Haitian public away from seeing Constant coming in, and also I think to keep the Haitian government off guard, because the Haitian government is seeking Constant. He's charged with crimes. There will be a prosecution of Constant.
And a trial.
Yes, and the U.S., according to this memo, says they won't give advance notice.
What does that mean? Till now, Constant, the personality of Constant, is something worth those arrangements for the U.S. government?
Well, I think Constant still has a bit of leverage over the United States.
Which is?
Which is that there's still information he has which he hasn't disclosed yet. He met, you know, he has said that he met almost every day with the CIA station chiefs. These meetings took...
In jail?
No, while he was running FRAP. And these meetings took place, remember, at the height of the terror. as Frapp was going out every day committing murders and arsons and massacres, Constant would be meeting with the CIA men who would give him cash. And it would be very important, and the Haitian people certainly have a right to know, well, what went on in those meetings? What did, for example, the meeting that Constant, first meeting that Constant had with John Cambori and the station chief after the assassination of Ismarie, or for that matter, before the assassination of Ismarie, what did Camborian say to Constant? What did Camborian say to Constant when Constant came in for the meeting after Ismarie had just been gunned down by Gros Fanfan and the other people affiliated with Frapp? What did Camborian say? What did he say to Constant, the meetings before and after the torching of Cité Soleil? What did he say as all these other slaughters were going on, and as these U.S. submachine guns, pistols, and hand grenades were coming in from Haiti?